Do you think you have what it takes to break into consulting? Let's see if you can measure up, as I'm joined by Alessandro, a senior analyst from Accenture. Now, Alessandro, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Of course, man. I'm looking forward to it as well. Do you mind giving a little synopsis about yourself?
So Alessandro Ferrelli here. Nice to meet you all or talk to you all. Like Amar said, I'm a senior analyst at Accenture. I've been working with Accenture now for almost 3 years. I graduated from Ryerson, or I guess TMU now, but it was Ryerson at the time, back in 2022. Took business at Ryerson. I majored in economics, minored in finance. Always kind of thought I'd go the finance route and then realized I didn't really like it very much. Grew up in Etobicoke. In terms like personally, I'm a very active person. I like to consider myself extroverted, love my friends, love my family. I'm still located in Etobicoke right now. Love to cycle, love to work out. And yeah, I guess that's a little bit about me.
Super. Amazing, man. Let's get started to the very first question. Talk to me about consulting. How did you come across it? You mentioned earlier that you thought finance, kind of move over to consulting. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. So I think what had pulled me towards consulting was my co-op years. So when I was at Ryerson, the co-op program basically added an extra year of school, right? So in between my third and fourth year, it was 16 months straight of co-op. So I did three different work terms. One was 4 months at a small company doing sales. Didn't really like it too much. Then I did 8 months at Sun Life doing cloud finance. And I really, really liked that job. And that's, I think, what kind of pushed me towards consulting. And then I did another 4 months at the Ministry of Energy, doing like kind of like data analytics there. And during that time, I got more of an understanding of, you know, what I kind of liked from my professional life, what skills, you know, am I good at, what do I like, and kind of where do I want to take my career. So in between my last co-op term, so that would have been the summer of 2021, I believe, and then my last year of school, which started in the fall, I started thinking, okay, like, where do I actually want to take my career? What do I want to do after I graduate? So I was looking at, okay, you know, what skills do I like? I'm like, okay, I like talking to people. I need to be in a job where I'm constantly interacting with others. I also like, you know, being analytical, you know, looking at data, figuring out, you know, how can I help a business out? So when I was looking at, you know, what I liked and what I was good at, consulting seemed like a great option to me. I was like, you know, I get bored very easily, so I don't want to be stuck in a job where I was going to be doing the same thing over and over again. So I started looking at, okay, what are my options? And then I basically narrowed it down to consulting. So within that summer of 2021, I had actually 55 coffee chats over the span of, I want to say 4 to 6 months, between the months of like April to like August of 2021. And basically I'd send like 10 LinkedIn messages a day to people in, you know, the big four accounting firms, Accenture, you know, MBB, stuff like that, just to learn more about, you know, the consulting industry in general, but also, you know, what kind of differentiated each firm. So then by August time, at least back when I was applying, all the companies basically had around the same recruitment timeline. So you apply in August for full-time roles. And then usually by, you know, late August, early September, they start doing interviews.
Right.
So I had applied around mid-August to all the places, you know, that I applied to. So big four accounting firms, Accenture, and then MBB. So 8 total. And then by early September, I started getting interviews. And then by the end of September, I basically accepted a position with Accenture to start when I graduated in May of 2022.
That's amazing. What made you decide to start with Accenture?
Absolutely. So I think the two biggest pulls for me that brought me to Accenture was definitely the culture and also money. So from a culture perspective, at least, actually, I think they still do it now. But you're basically, when you're invited to an interview, you're matched with somebody who already works there, and they're called an interview buddy. And they basically help you get hired. So that was a huge, they're pretty much supposed to help you through the interview process, answer your questions, give you tips, kind of, you know, you could use them as a soundboard before you're actually walking into an interview. So for me, that was a huge pull, because I'm like, you know, they're already investing in me before I even work here.
Right.
And that was something that was completely unique to Accenture. I'm sure there's other companies out there that do it. Mm-hmm. But at least from the companies that, you know, I was interviewing for at the time, Accenture was really the only one that did that. So that was one big pull, was the culture. The second was also money. Accenture's offer was significantly higher than, you know, the other places I was interviewing for at the time. Mind you, I didn't interview with MBB, so I know they pay higher, but at least it was much higher than the Big Four, which I was interviewing for multiple of them during that time. So the mix between like culture and money, it was just enough of a pull for me to, you know, say yes and, you know, start my career with Accenture.
Thank you for being honest, man. I really appreciate you kind of talking about both the reasons why you decided to go with Accenture, and I'm glad it's working well so far with you.
Absolutely.
Next question. Talk to me about some of the skills you need for consulting.
Ooh, good question. I'd say the most important skill would definitely be communication and people skills. At least if you're in a client-facing role at the end of the day, they need to put people that know how to communicate well in front of others. So soft skills, I'd say, are the most important. Presentation skills, being able to have a good conversation, even to just be able to like shoot the shit with a client at the start of a call, you know, ask them how their day's going, you know, find things that you both have in common and, you know, kind of build some rapport. So soft skills, I'd say, are definitely the most important thing if you're in a client facing less technical role. And then from a more technical perspective, you definitely need good data analytics skills. Know how to use Excel, know how to, be able to do data visualization, build a graph, be able to tell a story with data. But in terms of like hard skills, you don't need, I would say, very high technical skills. You don't need to know how to code. I mean, now in today's day and age, it was a little different when I was applying, but you probably want to know how to use AI, like make sure you're playing around with ChatGPT or whatever, you know, AI tool you like. So that would probably help nowadays because it can really make your life easier,
right?
Especially with creative exercises. But one thing I always tell students, you know, when they're applying and whatnot, is you want to make sure when, you know, you're invited to the interview stage that your communication is crisp, because I'm of the mind where it's like if they're inviting you to an interview, they're basically already saying you have what it takes on paper. Now, can you, you know, communicate your worth? Exactly. So I would say if there was one skill that's the most important, it's communication, and then presentation skills probably behind that. But yeah, I think at least for consulting, the soft skills are a lot more important than the hard skills. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if you consider it a skill, but adaptability is also really huge, right? Yeah. Like you're going to be, you know, switching teams, projects, you know, every, you know, couple months or maybe years, depending on how long the projects are. You know, you're going to have, you might go from a supervisor that's very, very hands-on to somebody who's very, very hands-off, right? You may have somebody that, wants you to communicate a certain way, opposed to somebody else who may want you to communicate a totally other way. So just being able to be adaptable to, you know, different teams, different kinds of work, I'd say is really, really important in this industry. But definitely, I think at the end of the day, consulting is something that it's much more important to hone your soft skills than your hard skills. Well, you're still obviously going to want to grow your hard skills.
Right. Follow-up question to what you said. You mentioned storytelling with data. Do you mind talking a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in certain situations, you're going to be asked to, you know, make a recommendation, for instance. So one example I could give was one of my projects, we were basically building an application, right? It wasn't entirely from the ground up, and essentially our entire front end of the application was being, you know, built from the ground up. It had an existing back end, but that's not that important. And we had to prioritize certain features, right? So figure out, okay, what do we build and what don't we build? So being, you know, I was responsible for most of the front end when I was on that project. So design it, help with the visual design, especially figure out, you know, how's it going to work? What's the functionality of it? And there were points where, you know, I'd have to, you know, go to my manager and his manager and basically figure out, you know, do we invest time and energy into this or not? And a lot of that would be backed up by data. So there was one example I remember where we told the client, you know, we're going to be able to basically have these people that are third parties having foreign addresses into our system. And I remember I'd made the recommendation to not actually build the feature through technology, but do it rather through a process. Mm-hmm. And the reason was I thought the data didn't warrant a technical solution. So when I did a bit of a rough analysis, I was like, you know, out of the whole population of users that are going to be using this, I think it was like, you know, 0.5% have a third party. And of those third parties, how many of them are not located inside of Canada, which was an even, you know, smaller percentage. And I think it was at least the number I had gone to was less than 10.
Wow.
Right. So I'm like, this is going to be used less than 10 times. Mm-hmm. Let's not do it. right? So I brought that up to my manager and then his manager. And I was the one who made the call on whether or not to ship it or not. But you need to be able, when you're making recommendations like that, to, you know, really be able to back yourself up with data and not just be like, okay, I have a feeling that this might be the right way to do it, or that might be the right day. Sometimes you don't have the data handy, but, you know, if you are able to actually, you know, if you have information collected, you know, use data and that to help, you know, strengthen your argument and show people why, you know, you think it should go this way or that way.
Right. That's fantastic. I'm glad you were able to storytell your way to convince the client to what you thought was the best decision for him or her, right? That's amazing. Now, something else I wanted to ask you about, your communication skills. Absolutely top notch. You can see on the podcast right now. Fantastic. So can you talk to me about how you were able to learn and grab those communication skills?
That's a good question. I think it was a mix of a couple things. I'm going to be honest here. I think some of it is just natural. I think it's one of those things where I guess naturally, I don't want to say naturally I was born with it, but at least both of my parents were, I like to think, great communicators. They're both extroverted. Never really saw them, you know, do public speaking, for instance. But as long as I can remember, I never really had much of a problem speaking in front of a crowd. And I think it was one of those situations where it would just be a constant positive feedback loop, right? Like I would do, whether it's presentations in a class. I even remember, I have a memory, I think it was in grade 4 or 5, and I did a book report. I forget what the book was, but anyway, I dressed up for it. I got like an A+ on the project. Awesome. And at least back in my earlier schooling, like elementary and high, and early high school, at least I wasn't a strong student. I wasn't a weak student either, but I was not, you know, a top of the class kind of guy. And at least presentations and communication was always something that, I don't know, I guess I felt I was always good at. Right. And then I would get that positive affirmation from my environment, right? From teachers, classmates, like even when we, you know, when I met you at that conference, right? And Muhammad gave that presentation, right? I got glowing feedback from students, right? And I remember telling the story actually when we're at that conference, when I gave the client demo of actually that same project I referenced, you know, five minutes ago. And I got absolutely glowing feedback from the client, from my teammate, from my manager, his manager. So I think it was a mix of, you know, just some of it's just innate, and then it was just getting that constant positive reinforcement. And now it's gotten to a point where I realize like that's my bread and butter. Like at the end of the day, for me to make the most out of my career and my life, that's the skill I really need to hone in on. Like, yeah, I've got good technical skills or data analytical skills, and I think I'm a decently analytical person, but I think there's a lot of people that are out there that might be better than me analytically. Mm-hmm. But there are a few people I think that are, you know, or at least my age, that are, you know, a strong communication wise or presentation wise. And I know it's also something, a skill that a lot of people struggle with, right? Like, you know, talking in front of a large audience, stuff like that. For me, it usually doesn't faze me. And I think also some of it, that's also contextual. Like I know a lot of people, and myself included, suffer from social anxiety, right? And I want to say up until like, you know, maybe when I was around your age or maybe a little bit older or younger, I really started to chip away a lot of that social anxiety. And like now I'm at a point where most situations I can walk into and I just don't feel away, right? So I think that also helps, being able to just stand in front of a group and just contextualize things. Being like, at the end of the day, even if, you know, you may not have a positive view on me, I hope you do, but if you don't, that's really not going to affect my life that much.
That's true.
Like if you're, the way at least I look at it is, unless we're interacting with each other on a daily basis, your image of me, either positive or negative, is going to hold a little weight on my life. I obviously want to be liked by people. I think all humans do. But at the same time, if I'm not, like at the end of the day, it's not going to hold that much weight, right? I want, obviously, you know, my friends, my family, you know, my colleagues, stuff like that, that's a little bit different because you interact with them regularly and they actually, if you do impact your life. But yeah, I guess to kind of hone back and get back to the question, I think it was a mix of, some of it's just innate ability, some of it was just positive reinforcement, constantly using that skill and increasing that skill. And then some of it was also just eroding my own anxiety to just get me a point where I can just speak openly and freely without my own mind kind of holding me back.
That's fair. Something else I actually wanted to mention, going back to what you said earlier on, Tom Holland, very famous actor, mm-hmm. at least I'm 80% sure it was him. He said that if you despise me and you criticize me, you're not allowed to unless you have my phone number, right? And I thought about it, it kind of makes sense, right? Like, unless you're that close to that person where you have their phone number, you can chat to them, FaceTime them whenever, it doesn't make much sense for you to criticize them for absolutely no reason.
100%.
And I feel just kind of visualizing that and thinking about it, you're like, oh shit, that's true. You don't really have to care about other people's opinions. Obviously, I still get affected by it. I think all humans
100%,
do.
100%, absolutely.
But I feel slowly just taking those steps, at the end of the day, it just becomes easier as it goes on.
Absolutely.
Right? Another thing I wanted to ask you about, apart from communications, what other strengths do you think are top notch for you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think one would be my ability to connect people, especially in my personal life.
Mm-hmm.
At least I have two main friend groups, I would say. One would be my, I'd say friends I made from like elementary school and high school. And funny enough, most of them actually weren't from the high school I went to, but basically kind of from elementary school. Yeah, kind of around the area. Mm-hmm. And then the other would be my friend group I met at Ryerson.
I see.
And I've been able, I want to say, to connect not just the groups, like not just intermingle the groups themselves, but also be able to introduce people to whole new communities. I've also had friends where I've, you know, just met them one-on-one and then I've actually brought them into one of said group, right? Whether it's, you know, the Etobicoke group or the Ryerson group. So I think my ability to connect folks is something I'm very proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kind of makes me realize that like you can really be a community builder. Like I'm only 25 right now, but like I'm like in 10, 20, 30 years down the line, like I want to be somebody where it's like, if you need, you know, access to an opportunity or you need access to certain people, you know, I can be there and I can provide that bridge. So that's something I think I do, I guess, better than others. And I guess some of it also, part of it's communication. So I guess it's kind of piggybacking off of communication. But for me, I think that's something that I'm definitely strong at and it brings me immense joy. Like I've had friends that have met, you know, people that they've dated, you know, through me.
Wow.
I've had friends. Yeah. I don't know if I have any right now that they've directly met their spouse through me. Yeah, just honestly being able to connect people and especially I've been able to connect some people that I know, you know, may not have as of a circle and bring them into the communities that we've created. And I can't just take credit myself, right? I can't just say like, if it wasn't for me, neither of these two groups would exist because that's not true. But at the same time, like I think I was an instrumental part of both of, you know, those groups and just being able to bring people into that and see, you know, and them being able to get the benefits from the people I love so much for me just brings me immense joy. And I think it brings me more joy than, you know, any amount of money could. Right. And we can get into this conversation a little bit later, but especially as you find more success in your life and whatever, like the listeners here as find more success in your life, you know, making money's great. But at the end of the day, you know, when your bank account has, you know, $100,000 or $10,000, like really doesn't affect you that much. And for me, the thing that brings me the most amount of value is seeing, you know, the communities that are around me and the communities that, you know, I've helped grow and develop. So that's, I'd definitely say a skill that I think I have, or, you know, I exemplify a little bit better than most people. And something I definitely hope to grow, you know, as I get older.
Mm-hmm. Helping people, fantastic. I love being able to relate to you just because my Schulich friends, my Milton friends, like from where I'm
mm-hmm.
living, being able to combine those two, being able to bring those communities together, and then my mentors as well, adding that to the mix. It's really nice because a lot of my mentors, they've helped me so much. So literally yesterday, I was on a call with my mentor for, I think, an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
Just because I messed up some shit, so I needed...
Yeah.
I want to be able to share that with my boys as well. In case they have any of those moments, sure, I'll be there for them. But obviously, I'm not going to be as wise as maybe the fourth or third year in our school, right? Another thing, I love helping communities, man. It's I relate to you about the fact about money. Like, obviously, I haven't touched large sums of money just yet.
You'll get there.
But inshallah, yeah, hopefully. But the idea of being able to help people with whatever you can at the moment, whether it's like just giving a dollar out of your bank account. Like, I'm a Muslim, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's this idea that we have about charity. Let's say you have $10 in your bank account versus person B who has $100,000 in their bank account. If person B donates even like $100 and person A donates $1, the person who gets more good deeds is person A because they gave more from what they could.
Yeah.
And I love that idea, right? I love the idea that doesn't matter how less money you might have, it doesn't matter how much you eventually give, it's your intention behind it.
Absolutely.
And I love that idea. I love being able to implement in day-to-day activities. Still got a long way to go before kind of get there, but I just love contemplating and thinking about it.
What's the thing? Like, I'm a big proponent of doing it now, right? And it's both, it's giving both time and money, right? Like, I've been donating to charity personally since 2019. And I know we've spoken about this earlier, but I'll call myself that religious, but at least in terms of believing in a higher power and believing in God, I was raised a Christian and I'd say I'm somewhat still Christian. But this was one of those moments where I actually thought God spoke to me. Mm-hmm. At least the way I look at it is though I think God speaks to people indirectly. But I'll never forget the winter of 2019. I don't remember what month it was, but I was called in for jury duty. So I go in and obviously I don't want to do jury duty because I have to miss class, right? So I go in and I talk to, you know, whatever the, you know, person who handles it is, right? And I told him, I'm like, hey man, listen, I'm a student, you know, I have class that, you know, I pay for my school. Like, can I please, you know, get exemption? And, the guy was like, yeah, of course, wrote me the note or whatever. And then, you know, I'm off on my way, right? So I was walking from the courthouse to Ryerson, to Vic Building. I remember I had an economics class that morning. And as I'm walking, there was one of those like street salesmen, right? And they were wearing this yellow vest and whatnot. And they stopped me. And normally, 99% of the time, I don't give them the time of the day, right? I have my headphones in. I just keep walking. But for some weird reason, I took my headphones out. I listened to the guy, right? And he was from Amnesty International. And basically, they help, you know, people who may be, you know, persecuted because of certain beliefs or whatnot in, you know, areas across the world, right? So he told me what they did. And I'm like, you know what? This is like a pretty good cause. And he asked, can you, you know, give some money monthly, right? So like, sure, why not, right? So I think I started with, I think it was like $10 to $15 a month, right? So I did that. And then every year they call, or at least they call me around, I think it's like around the summertime. They call me and they thank me for my donation.
Oh, that's nice.
But it's crazy because every time they've called me, they always ask, you know, can you give a little bit more, right? And every single time, except for the last time that they've called me, they've asked, you know, can you up it? And every time I've looked at my life and I've been like, you know what? I keep getting more and more blessings. So as a result, I'd up it, right? So from 15 to 20, 20 to 25, 25 to 30. I think I'm at 30 or 35 right now monthly, right? But for me, it was like, you know, it might sound weird, but at least the way I looked at it in my head was, you know, God helped me kind of get out of jury duty. And then he presented me with an opportunity to give back immediately that day, right? And I chose to, right? And that's why I'm of the mind where, you know, you hear, you know, people saying, you know, I want to be philanthropist, I want to give back, but I'm like, you got to give back now. You can't say I'm going to give back when I'm successful, because what's that metric? What do you get to then be like, all right, now I'm going to give back, you know, some money, or now I'm going to give back some time? That's why I always go on coffee chats every, or at least I try to. Maybe there's some students, and I'm sorry if you reached out and I haven't been able to go on a coffee chat with you. But I was like, you know, I was telling you earlier, I went on 55 coffee chats back when I was a student. I had so many people that helped me out. So what kind of person would I be if I couldn't give my time back, right? So that's why I'm a big proponent of, you got to give your time and money now, because if you say you're going to do it when you're successful, it's just wishful thinking, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, 100%. That's something I think that, at least to me, is very important. I think we kind of share that, you know, the importance of giving back both time and money.
Right. I'm glad you brought time into the mix as well, because a lot of the, I don't want to say time again, but a lot of the time, sometimes people just don't need money. They just need your time.
100%. Right?
Like sometimes my boys will just call me and they'll be like, yo, I did some messed up shit. I got to chat to you for like the next 2 hours, right? They'll swing by their car. We'll just sit in the parking lot, just talk about it, kind of strategize, think about their emotions, kind of let it all out. But I like that. I really like being able to help someone when they're stuck somewhere, stuck in some place, because I got that help. Like literally just yesterday, right? I did something 100%. Messed up. Being able to get the help from so many people. I think 3 of them came on the podcast as well, which is sick. But just getting that help, being able to use that to help some other people in the future, I love it, man. 100%. I really, really love it. And going back to what you said about now, I agree with that so much, because my friend is the one who actually told me about this. I was inside my friend's basement. We were just laughing around, having fun, eating Lizzie's, right? Lizzie's shawarma. And I was telling them about you know what, in the future, I want to make KKC charity, right? And it's kind of like the C at the end.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what, I'll make it Hans Clean Charity, because KKC actually means Hans Clean. I'll explain that in a little bit. So then one of my friends was like, that's sick. I'm really, really you're able to do that. But listen, why don't you start now, right? Don't think about in the future when you're, inshallah, a millionaire.
Hopefully, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
All the things you can do now, how no matter how small it is, right? Even 5%, 2.5% of your income, it really doesn't matter. Just try to help society in whatever way you can, right?
100%.
Going back to Hans Clean Consulting, like the reason why, it was grade 10, I'm pretty sure, right? Grade 10, I didn't get too much money. Like, I had a tutoring job. It was part-time, not too many hours. I was like, shit, I love food. Like, I love food. I want more food,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So now I was like, what do I do, man? And then I saw these barbers, like, 30 minutes of cutting hair, they get $60. I shit, I'll just make that my full-time job, yeah, right? And I decided that I'll become a barber. And that's, the name was Hans Clean Cuts, right? Because I was young, I didn't know what to do,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I made KKC Cuts, and you can search on Instagram, it's still up there, right? And I used to just give haircuts. I remember my boy, the very first time I gave a haircut, half of the head was a high fade and the other half was a low fade. It was so funny because I just kept trying and trying and trying.
I was dog shit
at cutting hair, right? Then slowly I started to understand tapers. I started to understand how to give like fades without guards, or like, just free-handing it. Then I decided to make KKC clothes, where I'll be really honest. Please don't punish me for this, but I decided to sell rep clothing, right? KKC clothes. I would sell those, get money from that, and then that kind of failed and, you know.
Yeah.
So then I made KKC Consulting, where I was like, you know what? I don't even care about money this time. I just want to give free advice to everyone else.
100%.
And be able to help them in whatever way I can.
100%. And it's one of those things where it's like, if you're delivering value for people anyway, you build a community around yourself anyway. And then when you actually do have a good idea and are able to monetize something, you have people that are like, this person provided me so much value for free.
Exactly.
Right? I remember it's actually Gary Vee. I know he gets a lot of hate because of his, you know, more eccentric personality. But it was actually really good advice. And it's like, you know, don't be trying to get money out of the gate. If you can just build a community and provide value to people for free, you know, there's going to come a point one day when, you know, you've got a great idea, you've built a, you know, good business or service, and the people line up because they're like, this person, you know, has helped me so much for free. Why would I not want to return the favor for them, right? But you don't see it as much, right? Especially, I mean, I haven't lived outside of Canada. But, you know, in the kind of world we live in, right, at least in the West, it's very consumerist, very transactional, right? But it's like at the end of the day, you know, people gravitate towards genuineness and you know, help provide them value at no cost of their own, right? And it's like you build things, you build a community like that, the money will come eventually, right?
Alex Ramosi talks about that as well. Like he said, give stuff for free so much that people just feel bad for not paying you, right? Just over delivering. Yeah. Even during my sales calls, like I have a sales internship. So what I try doing in my sales call is I just tell them some of the features, maybe not all the features.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as we deliver the thing, we're like, shit, this is double the features that I was promised.
Yeah. Right?
And that just keeps making them think, you know what? I'm glad that I paid a certain amount. I got more value than I really thought that I would get. And I want to keep coming back to you because you know what? You helped me out when I needed it. And I'm very grateful for you. For that.
100%.
Yeah. Now, great talk, but kind of switch back to Accenture.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting question. Why do you think Accenture accepted you? Apart from your grades, your resume.
Another great question. I'll give you a technical answer and a not so technical answer. So from getting my foot in the door, I think I was a very well-rounded applicant.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that is going to be, I mean, I guess it's going to be a little bit resume, but I'll get more into the non-resume stuff after. So my grades were good by the time I was applying. I'd say my professional experience was very well-rounded. You know, I'd worked at a variety of industries, corporate sales. I worked at Scotiabank part-time while I was in school as a teller. That job, by the way, is probably the hardest job I've ever had. And it didn't pay well. So I had that. I also had a more technical certification. I had my AWS cloud certification, which I don't think students normally had at the time. And I had referrals inside Accenture. So big thing that I recommend, especially any student listening to this, don't cold apply ever. have somebody on the inside, go on coffee chats, have somebody that can refer you, that can put in a good word for you, because it goes a long way. Now, on the less technical side, I think why Accenture chose me was definitely my communication skills and my belief in myself. I believe in myself more than most people believe in themselves, and I believe in what I can do in this world and the success I can have. And I think I'm able to convey that to others. I remember when I was going through the interview process, at least with Accenture, they basically was 2x2. So you had like a technical one. So it was like a case interview and then a behavioral, and then a technology showcase and another behavioral interview, this time longer. And I remember, at least in the first round, the case actually didn't go very well. Behavioral went decently well in the first round, but the case, we worked really well together, but we got the wrong answer.
I see.
Right. But like from a technical perspective, we didn't pass the case. Right. But we showed good communication. We showed good teamwork because it was a group case. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that helped. Now, when I had my second round of cases, or not cases, interviews, there was, like I said, a tech showcase where they're basically like, here's emerging technology. Here's a bunch of industries. Basically, it was a creative exercise, like find a use case for one of these emerging technologies in any of these industries. So it's basically like, show us some value, right? And I'd made a whole nice slide deck for it, all that stuff. And when I got into the call, for some reason, the fucking share screen wouldn't work. So I presented the entire thing. I could see my slides,
right.
But the person, the senior manager that was interviewing me could not see my slides. But still, by the end of it, like I communicated so well that they were like, great. Like I knew exactly what you were talking about. Great job. And then my behavioral interview, I remember it was with a managing director. By midway through, we had built so much rapport. It wasn't even an interview at that point. It was like catching up with one of my boys,
right?
I think I was able to build enough rapport where it's like this guy, at least compared to some of the other applicants, like I believe I was not as strong on paper as most of the people I was up against, but I was able to sell myself a lot better than most people are. And I'm still of that mind where if I can get my foot in the door, if I can get invited to an interview, as long as I'm not missing, you know, technical skills that are needed for the job, mm-hmm. I think I could beat out 95% of my competition, right? Just due to my own belief in myself and my ability to communicate that I can learn, I can grow and develop and, you know, figure out whatever obstacles are thrown my way. So at least from like an interview perspective, I think that's why they chose me. And then in terms of just kind of getting my resume in or getting at least my foot in the door, I think that was just being well-rounded. I also had some entrepreneurial experience as well.
Right.
I guess to kind of talk about that, I'd created an entrepreneurial program through Enactus. It's a student group that I'm pretty sure almost all Canadian universities have. No, Chulik should have one. I don't think though it's as popular in Chulik than it is at other schools like TMU or, you know, like Queens or, you know, Ivy or those ones or whatever. But basically the whole premise around it is like you create like social ventures. So I created a program with basically we brought high school students through curriculum. We matched them with mentors that had entrepreneurial experience. So we taught them entrepreneurial skills, brought them through, or like I said, matched them with a mentor. And then by the end of the program, they would actually, they would actually be able to pitch to a panel of judges and actually get funding for the business. Now, this is where I kind of believe in luck. And actually, my buddy Corey had sent me a video on luck yesterday, which kind of helped reinforce it. But sometimes it's just right place, right time. So when we were creating that program, we were basically setting up the curriculum. And then a previous president of our student group was connected with Community Center, the SCHC, Scarborough Center for Healthy Communities. Mm-hmm. And they were an excellent partner, by the way. We basically had a partnership with them. So we were working on a program. We wanted to target high school students. And then basically a partner just landed on our doorstep.
Wow.
So that was a bit of right place, right time. And even then, I think, you know, not to get too off topic, but even me getting into Accenture, I think was also a bit of right place, right time. Like when I was applying, the economy was booming, right? Much better than it is now. So I think like, you know, students that are currently graduating now actually have a harder time than I did when I was graduating. So some element of success is definitely luck, I think. A lot of it is still hard work, right? But some of it's also just dumb luck as well.
Right. Thank you for that answer. It's fantastic. One guy I did want to relate to, his name's DJ.
Mm-hmm.
I had a coffee chat with him. He is going to Simon Kutcher for the summer. And he was telling me about his interview process. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, it was so cold. Like, I was sitting down, I was listening to it, right? And I'm genuinely interested behind the why. Mm-hmm. Like, how'd you get into this firm? Why'd you decide to go to this firm? What was your journey? Mm-hmm. I love learning about that. So then he was telling me about his thing in the final round of the Simon Kutcher interview. And keep in mind, this guy tried to go for consulting second year, the summer of second year. He was really, really, and he still landed Simon Kutcher, which is fantastic, mm-hmm. right? Very, very how we got that. He was telling me in the final round, the guy who, like the partner who was interviewing him, he looked at the screen and then he looked at him, looked at the screen again, and then looked at him. And he was like, listen, when I looked at your profile, what did you want me to think? And then DJ was like, I just want you to know that no matter who walks through this door, I'm going to be able to communicate my ideas to a client much better than any of them. I want you to know that if you put me in whatever boardroom, whatever meeting, I'm going to be able to evaluate my ideas and not embarrass you or myself, whatever case that might be. Of course, I'm paraphrasing. Apologize if I got that wrong, DJ. But it's just that idea that he was so confident in himself. I was like, oh, shit, this guy's a man.
Well, you have to be. I mean, like, even... I remember it was actually a documentary I watched, and, you know, I know he, you know, might be a bit of a controversial figure now, but Kanye West, if you ever watch Genius, I'd recommend you watch that documentary. You could tell way back then the confidence he had in himself and this belief in himself and his success. I'm of the mind where it's like, if you want to really make it somewhere in the world, because I'm the kind of person where it's like, I honestly think I could become Prime Minister of Canada.
That's like,
will I go for that? Mm-hmm. Probably not, right? But why not shoot that high? Because honestly, I think this world deserves good role models, and I'm sure as hell not perfect, but at the same time, I think I'm a decent role model. And I would much rather we have, you know, good role models in front of us, right? So why not, you know, really reach for that? But you need the belief in yourself, because how the hell are you going to sell somebody else on you if you don't believe in you to begin with, right?
That's true. I mean, that whole idea behind, I'll be very honest with you, I've been balancing between like humility and hubris at the same time. And I actually just had a call with someone else who was actually at Accenture today. And he told me that one piece of advice he'd give him is try to balance the humility and hubris.
100%.
And then I thought about it and I kept thinking about it. Even the shower that I took before coming here, I just kept thinking about it. What did he mean by that? And just being able to have confidence in yourself, but not the arrogance to tell other people that, okay, I'm this good at this thing. Mm-hmm. I'm the best barber in Milton, right?
Yeah.
Whatever it might be, not having that arrogance towards it, but being able to have confidence in yourself, whether I don't think I'm the best barber in Milton, but being able to have your confidence in whatever it might be, it's very, very important. 100%. I was going to reference the fact that Kanye said, I remember the interview so clearly. Guy sitting there, Kanye sitting here. And then Kanye was like, I honestly believe I could become the Prime Minister of the US if I really wanted
to. Yeah.
And the interview was like, no, you couldn't. And then Kanye was like, no, I could be in the NBA if I really wanted to. And that belief, it really struck a chord in me, no matter how controversial he is right now. That specific moment that he had, it's fantastic.
100%.
I really look up to people who are able to position themselves to the point, like, maybe you don't have all the skills that you have, but at the very least, you have the confidence in yourself, not arrogance, but confidence in yourself that you can do anything if you put your mind to it.
100%.
Yeah. To kind of tie things up, I did want to ask you, what would be some of your advices that you'd give to yourself or some other people trying to become consultants?
Oh, good question. So I would say definitely something that you're doing and something that I did that helped a lot was networking. Like, networking is, I feel like, it's a piece of the puzzle that I think school doesn't push enough, right? I mean, they do stress the importance of it, but not enough, I think. Like, it really is true what they say, it is who you know, not what you know. So networking is a huge thing. Being well-rounded is another thing. I would really recommend folks, especially some of the younger people that are listening, you know, if you're in your first year, second year, and, you know, maybe you're not ready for internships yet, get a part-time job. Work Wonderland. Like this is my Canada's Wonderland lifeguard. My first job, this was the merch I got from it. Work a job like this, because a lot of people are like, oh, you know, this has nothing to do with corporate. It's not like, you know, I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for this job. If I didn't work in Canada's Wonderland, I wouldn't be working at Accenture right now. So big advice is, you know, get experience. In my own opinion, work experience is way more valuable than any school could give, even work experience that's like, you know, low level service work, right? So do that, network with folks, stay well-rounded. And I also say the quicker that you can figure out what you're good at and what you like, you know, they don't even have to align with each other, but at least figure, like, the more you can learn about yourself, the quicker you're going to be able to find success in your own life, and not just material success or success in your career, but success in relationships with friends and family and potential spouse, success in everything, right? Learn more about who you are and what really, you know, drives you and what makes you unique, and really leverage that, because it can help you push yourself forward, right? Like if you're in, even right now, like my current project I'm on at Accenture, like I'm not using a lot of the skills that, you know, I'm good at or enjoy, right? So I don't enjoy work as much, right? I don't, you know, hate work by any means, but like compared to my last project, it was like I wasn't even working. This one feels a little bit more like work, right? So I'd say for like the best advice I can definitely give to students that want to get into consulting is network a lot. Figure out what firms best suit the kind of people that they are and best align with their values. Two, make sure you're well-rounded. Make sure you're getting good marks, have good work experience, and you know, do some learning on the side. Stay curious. So whether it's reading, listening to podcasts, grow your mind in some way and figure out whatever the best way is for you. Like for me, it might be reading. For you, it might be, you know, listening to podcasts or audiobooks. And yeah, I think learn about yourself and really leverage that. And then, you know, as a result, you'll be more confident in your, and it'll, you know, bring you more success and make it a lot easier to break into consulting. I don't even think you have to start that early. Like I didn't start my consulting journey until I was basically in between my fourth and fifth year, and I still made it in.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously the earlier, the better, but, and I guess at some point it might be too late. Like if you're in your last semester of your last year, it might be a little bit hard at that point. But yeah, like honestly, like, yeah, definitely network more about yourself and, you know, just keep growing, I'd say.
Right. Going back to what you said about Canada's Wonderland, like for me, I work at Mathnasium. That was my first ever job as well. I think I was in grade 11 when I first started it. Grade 10, I started volunteering for them.
Mm-hmm.
Got like 300 hours from that.
Oh, well.
Cause I was just an instructor, just not paid, right? I was doing the volunteer services. And then I became an instructor there. And that entire lesson, like I think I've been there for 3 years now, maybe four. But being able to have a boss who, and you're a boss, but being able to have a boss who kind of tells you what's wrong, what's not right, kind of lecture you, I feel it's a valuable lesson. It's a really, really valuable lesson being able to, I don't want to say like shouted at, but being lectured on something and have that guidance. It's something that really changed my perspective on everything and made me realize like, okay, there's a certain responsibility I have now that I have to accomplish no matter what happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can't say, yo, missing. I just feel like coming today. Yeah, I'm that. Go find someone else. Yeah, right? I can't do that, right? And being able to have that, okay, Tuesdays I got this, Saturday I got this. Just got to make sure I end up there 4 hours, go back home, mm-hmm. right? And I love that responsibility. I love the lessons I learned from it. Of course, I'm far from perfect, but I feel it's helped me develop so much just from my time there.
100%.
But I mean, apart from that, thank you so much, Alessandro. I really do appreciate you talking to the audience, and I'm sure the audience appreciates it as well. Now, KKC Consulting viewers, please tune into next week's episode. We'll see who the guest is, because I'll be honest, I'm not sure either. But have a wonderful time. Please subscribe and like this video as well. And once again, thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Have a wonderful day.